You're listening to The Perth Property Show, Australia's only weekly property podcast by West Australian experts for West Australian listeners. Catch your latest episode every Monday at 7 a.m.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to The Perth Property Show. My name is Trent Fleskins, your host as always. This week, we are talking sustainable construction, sustainable building. It's the first time we've covered this. We've been in that sustainable landscaping space maybe 100 episodes, but I thought it would be a good time, given all the push we've got in that green space amongst many councils, trying to get our 6-7 star ratings, and seeing these large skyscrapers coming up these days, or at least getting through planning. Even in Western Australia, it looks like we're supposed to be having the tallest timber skyscraper in the country soon. It's time to start talking about options for construction that don't always include double brick. They may not. But at the very least, are starting to become more sustainable. Climate change is something we cannot shy away from. It's going to become more expensive to live in hotter and colder and wetter climates going forward. So how do we build our homes in ways that mitigate all these costs from the start and just get those energy bills down, right? It's getting more and more expensive. To help me out with that conversation, I've got David Minot from Second Dawn, a burgeoning sustainable construction company. Dave, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thanks, Trent. Thanks for having me.
You don't see many of the companies like yours in Western Australia yet, where we're focusing on the sustainability outcomes rather than, I guess, making it as cheap as possible, smashing it out as quick as possible. I'm sure there's a factor there. There's obviously a design factor too. But tell me a little bit about yourself, Dave. That story of yours is how you got from chippy to now focusing on being as futuristic in your builds as possible.
I started as a carpenter out in the country where we built a lot of timber frame homes or brick veneer. Then moving into the city here in Perth, of course, it was double brick is the predominant way to build. Fell into doing the roof carpentry. From there, I got some real good opportunities to do some building over in Victoria, Queensland, as well as Canada. It's hard not to realise that everywhere else builds with timber frame. Coming back to Perth from overseas, I started up a carpentry company in the residential space. That's my forte, doing roof construction for a lot of the big guys here. From there, we built up the business to do larger scale timber projects. One of the biggest ones we did was the Samphire Hotel over on Rottnest.
Now, sure, many people have been there for a beer.
Mate, you know, it was an unreal project. Obviously, the landscape itself is cool, but of course, it has to be taken into consideration that we need to be eco-friendly in that area, and that's why the timber frame was the preferred method of construction there.
You got the glamping tents as well. You guys were involved in that.
That's right. Speaking of being eco-friendly, yeah, we did the tents there as well at Pinky's Beach. Real cool project as well. Low impact on the environment. That was the niche there. But yeah, bringing it back to the hotel, that it was all about the timber frame. That took us over a year to build. It's 80 units. A good project to work on. However, from there, I wanted to get into a bit more of the building space myself. So off the back of the home builder grant, I started up Second Dawn, and the initiative there was to really stick it into that timber frame home space, really contrary to what we have here in Perth. As you know, all the major home builders are double brick.
Well, they've really sold that idea. And again, we must question it because we can't be the only ones correct in the whole world. But the mindset in Western Australia very much is that I would think there's a perception that a build is lower quality or cheaper or less durable if it's a timber frame building.
Yeah, you know, and I love this. I love this story as well because you look at the 60s and before then, most homes in Perth were timber frame. You know, you go to any old home in Subiaco and you'll notice that it's a timber frame. But the issues we had then were, you know, they generally were prone to rot, to termite and to burning down. So that's where the brick companies really saw a weak spot in that timber frame market and just launched their campaign and did really well to show a better way to build. And honestly, back then, it was.
Well, you think about what timber was clad in back then. It was asbestos and it was some pretty poor fiber cement as well. So the idea that you could punch your hand through a wall is one that I think most, you know, everybody knocks their hands on the wall to check, is it double brick?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing was that they really didn't have good insulation either back then. You know, the R properties so low, and in fact, in most scenarios, there was none in the walls, ceiling, or floors. So it was just a sieve for air loss and heat gain.
Fast forward to 2022, you're running a sustainable construction company obviously getting a nice little leg up on the last couple of years with the building grants, good place to start a construction business. Tell us about those key tenets of what is driving your key selling position. Now, for me, I think there's some great stats running out of just the sustainability place right now, right? 40 million tons of carbon is produced every year by a construction industry. Yeah. That's a lot of carbon.
Yeah.
7,230 kilowatts of power are used by homes each year.
Yep.
40% is used on heat, 23% on cooling. Now, if you had a 6.6 kilowatt solar system, you would achieve a net zero for your own house. Yep. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Right. So, and the thing is that most of our solar systems, I'm pretty sure those inverters are like 3 or 4 kilowatts.
Yeah. And to add to that as well, you know, banking it up with the battery system would be real key as well, because with the solar system, you're getting the solar power when there's solar, where we obviously, given our roles during the day, we're mostly at work, but we're mostly home at night, and that's when we're using that power as well.
So the battery really helps to finish that off. Bit of money to spend on that. Water, 183,000 litres are used per home per year. That's really hard to get your head around, just how much water we use there, right? And 40% of the water is used just for looking after the gardens.
Yeah, that's right.
That's a lot, right?
Yeah.
Heat. Standard brick home loses 45% of its heat through its walls.
Yep.
You know, start to think about just why is my house so hot? Why is my electricity bill so expensive getting the aircon through? Double glazed windows reduce the heat loss by 60%. Most houses are not double glazed, probably because the builders have not been pushing it, I guess from a price perspective, and the local councils haven't been mandating it. Starting to come through a bit more with some of the energy ratings they're requiring now. So let's talk about finances. So I want to preface this whole conversation about the financial competitive advantage to starting to look at more sustainable construction, because I'm a very big believer that innovation only progresses on the curve of profit. If you can't see a profit or at least a zero-sum game here to innovate, the world doesn't do it. We just get on with what we're already doing. And that's why it's taken so long to see solar, wind, all these other technologies come through, because it's been too cheap to buy petrol until it starts to get not that cheap. Yep. And now we start talking about other options. So solar systems can save you about $2,500 a year. A rebate on solar is up to $5,200 a year. So straight away, a lot of that money up front is still being rebated. And if you go passive and you do it properly, you can save up to 70% of your energy costs a year. So that's a few thousand bucks for most houses. Now, this is the key, I guess, the cost side of things. And I'll ask you a bit more about it later, but the data's looking like it costs 10 to 20% more to build a home. So if a home costs 300 grand, it's 30 to 60 grand more to make sure that a house is passive. So if our energy bill's $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 a year, something like that, it's quite a bit of a payoff time frame to get to that. But I'm sure there are other benefits you'll talk about. So let's run through that, Dave. I guess we firstly need to break a few of these points down. Can you just give us a little bit of a rundown as to the costs involved and the intricacies involved in what makes a home that's sustainable different to the one we would be buying from a project builder?
Major differences is with any passive home, the minimum stand for glazing needs to be double. That's going to be straight away 30% more than just your single glazed windows. Now, your standard project home builder, they're going to use 4mm glazing. They are starting to go up to 6mm glazing, and that's just to be able to keep up with the NADA's star rating there. It's already getting a bit more costly for the major builders.
So how thick's the double glaze?
Double glaze, so usually you got 2 6mm with like a 15mm cavity in between.
Yep.
And the other important thing is to have a thermal break in between the outside layer of the frame and the inside layer. So the thermal break being, well, the outside of the window frame is going to get hot, right? So what you're trying to do is stop that bridging so that the inside of the frame doesn't become hot as well.
It doesn't become a radiator.
Exactly. You know, you feel a steel post on one side, it's going to be hot on the other. You know, it's because it just transfers that heat.
Okay. So to go into double glazing is going to increase our glazing cost by about 30%. But I'm assuming this is one of the big low-hanging fruits here on saving a lot on energy and just comfortability.
Yep, that's right. Then another one that you're going to be looking at paying a bit more for is your wall system, the wall build-up.
So we can't do double brick?
We can't do double brick, but you know, I also wouldn't be encouraging anyone just to go straight 90mm stud wall. Again, because the benefits of a double brick is it had that cavity, right? And that allowed it to breathe. Now, I haven't seen many well-built brick homes where that cavity is breathing well, but a 90mm stud wall doesn't breathe either, because again, there's no batten, there's no cavity. So that, you know, we're just talking about thermal bridging. Well, that sun's going to hit that outside cladding, go straight through your timber frame and then straight in. Steel frame's even worse because, again, with your high thermal conductor is steel. So we're going to be paying more for a wall build-up, because with our homes, what we've got is we do have a 90 mil stud wall, but then we've got a cavity batten on the outside where we stick our cladding, and that's allowing that ventilation from outside so that air, we all know hot air rises, the air is allowed to escape for heating that wall. Then in turn, we have another batten system as well. So it's that wall buildup that's going to cost.
So it's, instead of having double brick, we've got double timber, essentially.
Look, that's a funny way of thinking about it. Yeah, you know, it kind of is double timber. If you added it up, it wouldn't be, because the battens we can use are smaller and thinner gauge. So in that timber cost, it's less. I have seen and heard of people doing double timber walls, and that's an unnecessary cost.
All right, what if I came to you and said, Dave, I just don't like the idea of being able to knock my hand on the internal wall when I'm living in it and when I'm selling it and it be hollow. I want some part of my house, especially the internal part, to be brick. So it's like a reverse veneer.
Yeah, and you know, I would encourage anyone to go reverse brick veneer. By far, that is the best way of construction and the most expensive. So it's, you know what
I
mean?
Tell us why.
It's like, well, because we've got the two worlds coming together, right? So you got a 90 mil frame outside. So you're paying for that 90 mil stud wall. You're also paying for a 90 mil brick wall inside. And given an insight, the trades also here wouldn't really be susceptible to that type of construction.
Meaning, not much experience.
No experience. So like, I have seen one down in Fremantle, look like a really good job, but you're paying for the bricky, you know, you're paying him $2 a brick at the moment, plus you're paying the timber. So it's not an affordable way to build, but it is a great way to build if you can afford it.
With regard to sustainability?
Well, look, in regards to passive design, because it's got thermal mass inside, but I wouldn't put it in the same boat as sustainable. So there is a big difference between sustainability and passive, right?
All right, tell us about that.
Sure. So passive design is all about building a home that works with and against our natural elements, right? So it works with the sun, but it can also work against the sun. For an example, working with the sun is having, you know, your classic north-facing glazing. So in the winter months, that you are getting some sun ingress into your house. Now talking about having thermal mass walls being brick, if you are able to heat up a thermal mass wall, then that's going to be able to release slowly. That thermal lag will then heat up your home once that sun goes down, right?
High ceilings as well. I always find that when I'm in a Federation home with 34, 35 core ceilings, it feels cooler.
And that can be a problem. What a passive home is also trying to achieve, and also the NADERS system, is about keeping heat in. So if it's cooler inside naturally, when it's just a medium day outside, that wouldn't be a good home. It should be warm, should be room temperature. So if it's cooler, you haven't really achieved a passive home.
So you're doing half the job.
Yeah. So yeah, getting back to that example there of working against the sun is, you know, having things like shading, whether that's with awnings or even just landscaping. So then you're protecting your building against the sun, right? Look, a reverse brick veneer, I think we're getting a bit off topic, but, you know, great way to build. But it's the difference between that now and sustainability. Sustainability is, you know, what we all know. It's all about trying to reduce carbon emissions around the globe and reduce heat. Now, the amount of carbon produced by bricks to be able to make brick, we've got here a stat. For one ton of bricks, it creates 280 tons of carbon.
That's insane.
With timber, a ton of timber actually has a negative 806 ton carbon effect. With our homes, I'm just really trying to move away from bricks. They have their place, especially for retaining. If you do want to put it in for a thermal mass wall where you are going to get that north sunlight and hit it and be able to help radiate some heat into your house at the right time. But other than that, it's all about the timber.
So what's the next things? You've spoken about windows, you've spoken about the frame of the house. What's another low-hanging fruit?
It's the products. There's some seriously cool products and innovations that we can put into our homes. You know, we use heat pumps, so we've gotten rid of any gas. coming into our home. So, you know, there's actually a reduced cost by not having gas, which is a plus. But also we're trying to intentionally move away from fossil fuels. Induction cooktops and appliances, which run off electricity, which, you know, if you got your solar, this is how we achieve net zero, right? You're creating your own electricity that you need to then live in your house. And then some of the other systems, we're really all about sort of water conscious as well. You know, we don't want to waste the resources we have. So other things that we like to innovate and put into our homes are, we call them water catchment systems, but it's just a fancy way of saying water tanks.
So grey water stuff as well?
No, look, the reason why we're not going into grey water at the moment is just around planning issues and stuff like that. It is always going to be a little bit more tricky, but we said 40% of water goes to gardens, right? Mm. So, well, let's reuse that water we're catching towards our gardens, so we can reduce that wastage. But
where are we putting these rain tanks? Obviously, everyone thinks about a rain tank. It's one of those big cylinders sitting out the backyard. These days, I know there are a lot of slimline rainwater cells that you can put. Where will you normally have these in the backyard?
Yeah. Great question, Trent. I've been thinking about this sort of stuff for years, and with our specific design, we're able to actually put them underground.
Like a soak well, essentially.
Look, it's basically, think of a soak well. The reason why we do that is our homes are sort of targeted at homes in infill areas, so not the biggest.
Well, that's the problem when you think about, especially what we do at Strategic, we are all about infill.
Yeah.
And I'd like to be able to put more sustainable water catchment systems into these properties, but when you've got enough space for maybe 16 square meters in the backyard, there's nowhere to put your rainwater tanks, even if you wanted them.
Yeah. And so that's why we've put them underground. And even with our design, we catch water not just on our roof, but if it's hitting the walls as well. So then it then goes down into our drains and then goes into, we've got 2 5,000-liter tanks each side. The thing is, though, that's cost. Now, that's not integrated into our house price. That has to come as an additional, because not everyone's budget's going to be allowing these really good things.
Really cool idea, though.
You know, it's also really cool is that places like the Commonwealth Bank, they will give you a 0.9% interest loan on things like water tanks and solar. So if you're looking at trying to get a home loan, well, you can go, you know, any traditional way. But if you're trying to add things to your home, that's a really cool initiative as well in the way that we can put products in at an affordable rate.
Well, let's start talking about more incentives, right? It's nice to see the banks getting on board, nice with their PR. But are there any other incentives we've got out there right now that can make building a sustainable house, sustainable development, a little less expensive?
We obviously have solar rebates. Australia, everyone should know that.
How does that work?
Our standard example would be you go to your solar installer, and they will install your solar. They do the paperwork. They send that off to the government. They get the rebate, the kickback for installing the solar from the government, and then they pass that on to the client.
And what sort of cost are we looking at for solar at the moment for a standard, I guess, 4 kilowatt system? Well, is that enough?
Well, look, what's enough? But what we're doing, we're looking at 6.6 kilowatt. That's going to definitely do it. So 6.6 kilowatt with the storage battery system, you're looking at, with the inverter, $20,000 with about a $5,000 kickback.
Yep. And how long are these batteries supposed to last?
15 years. So it will pay itself back when you look at how much you spend on energy bills per year. Other incentives is, again, the banks will offer green home loans. Now, that might be only between 0.5% to 0.9% if you shop around.
Yeah, I've seen, I think it's Unibank, Teachers Mutual, these sort of banks offering green home loans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if we're looking at the building costs in an extra 10, 20%, let's say, for example, your house is costing you $500,000 to build, 10, 20% of that, that's what, $50,000 to $100,000. Now, what's 0.5% on that home loan over a 30-year lifetime? What would that be?
Yeah, it starts to add up. Let's put it that way, right?
So, I mean, it's already cutting that
down.
You're
saving at least a couple of thousand a year.
Yeah. I'd say up front, there's probably no real savings to be had with a passive sustainable home, but it's all long-term. And also, let's have that long-term perspective when we're thinking about what does our world look like in 30, 40, 50 years as well. Like, you know, at the end of the life of our home, have we done good in the decisions we've made with what our home has done for our earth as well, not just our wallets?
Let's think about local and state and federal government. I'm still harking on this incentive side of things. Are you saying there's not a lot that's going on other than the solar rebate? There's not much else? And if not, what would you suggest would be some easy pickings there for them to have a good PR win and make a big difference and get things moving?
There's a small rebate for doing heat pumps. So again, moving away from your standard hot water units being gas or electric, we're using heat pumps. So you get a small kickback there. But, you know, we're talking a couple hundred bucks. More controversially, we're offering $20,000 to anyone that brings an old brick home that we can demolish, because for us it's about trying to rejuvenate the stock of homes out there. So if we can remove a old energy inefficient home and then replace it with two new energy efficient homes, for me that's a massive win, and that's really that'd be a great life mission to be had if we can start changing the building landscape here in Perth, to move away from that inefficient brick home to an efficient timber home.
That's about the business case for this on the back end, right? Mm. And I haven't seen or looked into enough of the data, to be honest. But have you got any evidence of these homes actually selling for more than something similar? Is the market actually appreciating this from a financial perspective?
You know, I've only heard that sustainable homes sell for about 10% more than anything else on the market. I don't have any hard facts on that. It's just articles that I've read. I want to say that there probably isn't much of a difference. And the reason is I don't believe that there's enough understanding around or appreciation around what an energy efficient home offers and can do. And, you know, I often have this argument with people, and, you know, they'll say, well, you would never be able to sell a timber frame home here in Perth.
It makes me nervous, to be frank. Look, I wish that we could be more sustainable in the way we construct, and it's so easy to listen to you talk and get on board with these ideas, but at the same time, it does make me nervous if the idea of comparing doing a double brick townhouse development or a timber development, I'll be nervous that we'll be niching our market when looking to sell them at the end of the day, when the fellow walking through looking at purchasing the property is knocking every single wall and noticing it's hollow. Now, the cool side of the sustainable, especially the timber builds, is they look awesome. When you tie in sustainability with some really cool architecture, It doesn't get better than that, right? They look phenomenal. And the ironic thing is that a lot of the way through Western Europe, a lot of these places have been built with timber for decades, which is, and they don't care.
Centuries.
Exactly right. Now, and these are modern apartment buildings or modern mansions, and they make the most of it. They use it as features. All the cross-laminated timber, for example, that's going into these homes. Now, here, this is where I get nervous, and I wonder when that watershed moment will be, when everyone starts to flip the coin and go, oh, double brick. I'm not really keen on that. It's going to cost me in the long term.
Yeah, well, let me jump in there, because that makes me excited. I think that every market, especially the property market, has niches within their own buyers. You're going to have, obviously, a niche can only buy in, say, West Perth, in the Golden Triangle. There's a niche group there that can buy there. You're going to have a niche group of people that are looking at your project home builders. Why? Because that's where their budget allows, and they're going to be out there. So that's a niche market for this.
We are already getting
so much inquiry. And so many people going, I have not been able to find someone else or another builder or another company that's able to offer a sustainable passive home. And so what we're doing is we're actually unlocking a part of the market that's not been able to exist yet. And that's huge.
Yeah, it's a great way to put it. And that's the thing, is because there is no data or minimal data on it doesn't mean it doesn't exist yet.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can essentially be a price maker on these things as well. If you were to develop homes like this and have some bravery around it and sell it the right way, there is an opportunity that there is a market, especially if you are spot on with your geography. Mm. I think if you were to do this in Fremantle, it would be a lot easier to pass this on than doing it out in Hillary's, for example.
Yeah, sure. It's interesting. The biggest uptake we are getting is in the West Perth coastal areas. They're the people that we're getting the most interest. And then, of course, down south, the southwest coast.
Yeah. Well, and isn't the irony of it is with timber frame is that the second you step out of the Perth metro area, there is no expectation for double brick.
Yeah.
You go to Dunsborough, Margaret River, Augusta, Busselton, all these areas, no one's bothered at all. And if that, generally they look at it as an architectural feature that these things are built beautifully in timber.
Yeah.
You go up to the Pilbara, it's all built in steel frame mainly because of the cyclone rating. Second you're in Perth though, somehow the timber becomes lower quality or less durable.
Yeah, and I've always wondered to myself, I wonder where the actual cutoff of where that begins.
Yep.
You know, I think it must be the hills because, you know, a lot of homes around
Darlington.
Mundaring and Darlington, all those good areas that, you know, a lot are timber frame. And because they're in challenging areas as well, especially on the hills, you know, you're better to do a lightweight construction. But like I said, I grew up out in Northern. That's where I started and that's where I built. And it was all timber frame or brick veneer, but predominantly it was timber frame. And it was just, yeah, it wasn't until I came to Perth that I saw a double, well, you know, realized that that was the predominant way to build.
Yeah, there is a prejudice. That's the only way to put it.
It's, you know, it was a clever marketing campaign done by the brick companies back in the 70s because there were so many downfalls in timber, and I acknowledge that. But also, that's the power of perception and marketing as well, isn't it? And that's why we're trying to start peddling the importance of sustainable and passive design and timber frame homes to try and start getting that level playing field back and get people's heads around the important and the fact that timber frame homes are as good as a brick home.
Look, as I said before, innovation moves along the curve of profitability. As bricks have become so much more expensive in the last couple of years, it's given people, I guess, an opportunity to start thinking about timber and steel.
Yep.
Now, bricks are going to start getting cheaper again.
Yep.
The big building companies who love their brick are going to start making it much more affordable again over the next year or so to make it harder for people to see the business case. You've spoken to timber. Why haven't we said anything about steel? Is that not a sustainable option? Because a lot of the brick building companies are using steel as a cheaper option for their first homeowner market, so in the townhouse space.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm seeing that as well. I've seen a number of the project home builders doing either steel frame or if it is a brick veneer, it's with the steel. And I think it has got to do with the availability as well as the affordability. Steel by nature is not really a sustainable product. You can get what you call green steel, where it's businesses who are sustainable conscious and doing their part or their best to be able to reduce carbon. But, you know, the amount of energy that's going to be required to create steel, and once it is formed into steel, it can't reduce carbon. Timber is a tree. It's a living thing, even though it's then cut down into timber, steel can soak in carbon. So, yeah, so steel is not a sustainable product by nature. And like we were talking about that thermal bridging, it's a great conductor for heat.
So what you're telling me here is that those building companies, and I won't name them, but it's pretty obvious when you go out into the house and land packages that only build with steel frame. Are you saying that a steel frame roof is obviously less sustainable than a timber frame roof?
Yeah, again, by the nature of the product, it is. And again, by the heat conductivity of the product being steel, it's going to create more heat in your roof space.
It's a shame we see a lot of it. It seems to be much more prevalent these days, steel frame roofs.
Well, but that's the thing. Think about what's behind the marketing. It's got a lot to do with availability right now. Now, you can't get timber to sites. Why? Well, we have a problem, and it is around availability of timber,
chain.
Right? And why? It's because the rest of the world builds with timber. You know what I mean? So everywhere else in the world had the same initiative. Let's build, build, build. So what happened to all the stocks is they just got soaked up, right?
Yep.
And I'll give absolute credit to the steel companies. They pushed to the project home builders their product, and they've jumped on board with it because they were able to deliver in a time where you couldn't get anything.
Of course. So what will you say to those people whose rebuttal to sustainability via timber is like, would be, but if I'm building in timber, I'm cutting down a tree.
Yeah,
and
sure.
And we all want to make sure we save the trees.
Yeah. And if we're building with more timber, what do we have to do? We have to plant more trees.
Well, you hope so.
So we can get more timber, right? So if we start turning the demand to timber, well, then that's also going to encourage forestry to be able to enact, you know, better forestry initiatives in creating more pine plantations, etc., so that there is longevity there.
And people get nervous about cutting down the Amazon.
Look, I'm definitely against cutting down the Amazon, and I'm actually also against going any further on our Perth limits, and that's why our homes are targeted at infill, because I don't want to be cutting down trees unnecessarily. So when it comes to the pine plantations, they're there for a specific purpose. And like I said, even though it's been cut down into timber, which is now a product, it still absorbs carbon. So it's still able to be effective in terms of reducing greenhouse effects. And the timber that's getting used is new growth. It's been planted for the purpose of construction. It's not coming from old growth forests. It's not coming from down south where those areas are protected.
We're not constructing in Karri or Marri or
Darra. No, those days are so long gone. You know, I wish that they weren't, because they are a beautiful timber to work with, but our supply is limited. And obviously pine is it's a strong timber, but it also is a fast growing timber.
Fairly light as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's why we you know, predominantly use pine, and that's where the future is as well for that for the industry.
20 years from now, where do you reckon we are in terms of the balance of brick versus timber homes?
You know, I think we'll look back to this conversation and go, well, that was the beginning of maybe the end of brick homes, because there can't really be a future for double brick homes. And the reason is they're not going to be able to keep up with the NATA's energy rating.
Explain that.
So that's the National Home Energy Rating Scheme. Right now in Perth, we have the lowest rating. That's 6.1. And I think that bar's been set just so that brick homes can get in. Once we get to 7, and once we're starting to get to 8-star energy rated homes, you're going to be hard-pressed to be able to get a double brick home, or especially anything that a project home builder is offering, across that line.
So you're saying that at some point, the greenies will essentially make it impossible to build in double brick, have it meet the standards required?
You know, I wouldn't be going so far as saying, you know, the greenies are going to make it impossible. I think it's level-headed people that have a mindset for the future and want it to be a positive future. Mm. And so that they want to keep lifting the standard of homes.
You make a good point. It'll only happen when the majority of the population wants it to happen.
I think we're already seeing that. And like I said, we're getting a lot of inquiry, and I'm feeling that shift, and also having that conversation around how come no one else is doing this. And I am starting to see home builders offering, quote, sustainable products in their homes, like we'll upgrade double glazing, you can have solar. There's a micro shift, you know, and it's because builders do see the importance and the need to be able to offer something to that market, you know, to that niche market right now, being sustainable homes. But I'm of the belief that it will keep growing, and then it will be the predominant market.
Well, it has been growing. It was only a couple of years ago where builders were able to push homes through at a 4-star level.
Yeah, well, that's correct. And I mean, you go across any waters, you know, to America or to the UK, and their homes are already at minimum like 7 and 8-star ratings. So they're ahead of the game, and generally speaking, that's where Australia follows. You know, you look at their homes and their old timber frame as well.
Dave Minot, Second Dawn, really appreciate the chat, mate. It is one that we'll be able to look back on in the future and recognise, hopefully, a shift towards maybe not getting rid of brick altogether, but certainly including a lot more timber and sustainable and passive design options in our homes and our developments going forward. Thanks for your time, mate.
Awesome. Thanks, Trent.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Perth Property Show. If you've only just joined the conversation, you can catch up by heading over to our website, perthpropertyshow.com.au, subscribing to the podcast, or joining our Facebook page. Don't forget to tune in next Monday at 7 a.m. for more expert insights, local analysis, and suburb spotlights. Happy hunting!